You're listening to The Real Short Box, a comic book podcast made for geeks by geeks.
Hello, everybody out there in podcast land, and thank you for listening to The Real Short Box. My name is Donald.
And my name is Kevin.
We are again doing our fun social distance thing here on a recording app, and we are today talking about ranking the Universal Monsters. Is that right, Kevin?
That is correct, sir.
Oh, I'm already thrilled about this one. I'm excited. It's a fun little ranking. Now, obviously, we didn't go in and do every Universal Monster, just, you know, the big guns, so to speak, the bad boys of the Universal Monster world. So, you know, we're going to go in and we're going to do a top nine on this. So, Kevin, what's your thoughts when you think about Universal Monsters as far as, like, do you have any memories as a child with these characters or something, you know, that happened when you were a teenager or something like that?
Yeah, just basically when I was a little kid, I remember those old black and white, you know, Universal Monster movies that you would see, you know, Frankenstein or Dracula or the Mummy, you know, things like that. So, you know, it definitely left a mark, you know, on my young mind at the time. And certainly to this day, when you think of those classical black and white monster movies, those are the ones that come into mind, that's for sure.
Right. Yeah, totally agree. I also think of, when I think of Universal Monsters, I think of the 80s film Monster Squad.
Oh, yeah.
I believe that was written by Shane Black and Fred Decker, and directed by Fred Decker, if I recall. Fred Decker also did Night of the Creeps, if anybody remembers that one.
That was definitely a creepy movie.
Yeah. What was it? It's the good news, your prom date is here. The bad news is he's dead.
Yep. Well, I do remember that cover. That poster or VHS box cover was very creepy. You know, you see the little things coming out of his mouth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally creepy movie. And another Fred Decker, great little treasure. But Monster Squad kind of introduced me really to all these monsters. And I kind of vaguely knew of them before, but no one ever really showed me the classic Universal black and whites or anything like that. You know, all I was introduced to was this Monster Squad, which was kind of like the Goonies in a way, but just with horrifying monsters. But done in a cool way. So, like, as a kid, you know, some parents will introduce children to horror films and stuff like that very early. And, like, any horror film. Kevin and I, we both worked at a movie theater. We know that some parents will just not give a shit. Like, and that's their business, you know, it's not our business. We had to sell them the tickets regardless, you know, and they would go into some of the most horrific movies. And we, at the time, if you recall, Kevin, we were at the box office and we had no idea if they knew what this movie entailed. Nor could you say, you know, there's disembowelment in this movie.
Yeah, like you sell them tickets for Hostel 2. It's like, man, I hope you know what your little seven-year-old's getting into.
Right. You know your son's going to see some guy's genitals get cut off and shoved in somebody's mouth or something. You know, it's like not something really we encourage at movie theaters for parents with their children. But, you know, then again, it's really not our place as ticket salesmen to, you know, to do that. So we just were like, okay, cool. There you go. Here's your ticket. Enjoy.
One thing I forgot to mention, the Munsters TV show from back in the day in the 60s. Oh, that was fun.
Right.
That was fun. Herman Munster and then Grandpa is like, you know, dressed as, you know, basically a Dracula.
That was
a fun show.
You're right. I was introduced to the Munsters from Universal Monsters from the Munsters. Really? That's a good point. I did remember that. And I always did love the Munsters. Such a good, fun original concept, you know, just a really fun idea for a TV series.
Yeah, you know, it's a family, you know, fun family, clean, fun family TV show. You can't go wrong
right
there.
There was Lily, the wife, and there was Herman Munster, and then there was the Wolf Boy. I can never remember his name. And then Grandpa Munster, who was the vampire. And then there was a little girl, I think, right? There was a little girl?
Yeah, there's a little girl. Didn't they have a butler, too?
I don't know. I don't remember the butler.
I think
I don't remember a butler so well. But then, you know, they would get into hijinks and stuff with the neighbors and stuff. It was like a Beverly Hillbillies for monsters.
Yeah.
You know kind of fish out of water.
Herman comes home from work. You know, he's, you know, he had a bad day or something.
Right. And then there was a dragon that lived under the staircase, if I recall. Yeah. It's been a bit since I've seen it. A long bit, actually. And they tried to bring it back. The guy that did Hannibal and Pushing Daisies, mm-hmm. that writer/director, he really wanted to bring back the monsters. So he had Jerry O'Connell as Herman Munster. And they did a pilot for it, and it just didn't take. So they actually ended up making a sci-fi original movie. I think it was sci-fi out of it. It could have been NBC or something, but they're still owned by sci-fi. Is owned by NBC, so it really wouldn't matter. But yeah, they did that, and it didn't take. But I was excited that there was interest again in the characters, which is always nice.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's kind of like the Addams Family. That was a really fun show too, and very fun for its time as well. Very creative.
Absolutely.
So let's get started then. Number 9, we are going to go with one that a lot of people don't think about when they think about Universal Monsters. We're going to go with the Phantom of the Opera.
Oh, yes, Phantom of the Opera. Now, of course, there's been so many variations of this particular adapted. Well, first, I believe it started as a play and a book. And then you have the movies. You had the classical 1925 silent film with Lon Chaney Sr. And I remember that one scene that's famous. You see a lot of it, of the mask being taken off, and you see like that horrific face, and then, you know, the freaks out when she sees it.
Yeah, in that one, it wasn't like I'm half beautiful and I'm half horrific. No,
no, he's straight
dude,
up horrific.
All horrific.
Yep.
He's not somebody you invite over for dinner.
No, that's one thing I give credit to all those early silent films from like the teens and the 20s. They weren't holding back. I mean, if it was something grotesque, they're going to show it. Just like it was brought to, you know, they ain't playing around.
No, yeah, they wanted to horrify people, and they did. And the best they could do it was with makeup, you know, because they didn't have all these special effects and stuff. They had, you know, practical effects to a point, but
yeah, no CGI.
They were still growing. You know, it was early.
That's right. Right.
And so Lon Chaney also did The Hunchback of Notre Dame, which could technically be classified as another Universal horror movie if you look at it in the way it was originally intended, because in the original it's quite horrific what happens and what takes place in that. So
I thought it was a Disney movie.
Yeah, it was a Disney movie. It was a bad Disney movie.
Oh, that's right. It was considered one of the bad Disney 90s films, cartoons. Huh?
Yeah, it wasn't fun, man. It wasn't a good film. I felt so bad for the poor son of a bitch because all he kept doing was pining over Esmeralda, and she did not want him. She's like, it's like the ultimate friend zone. So any teenage boy watching this is instantly infuriated because he knows exactly what Quasimodo's feeling. And he's like, man... Well, fuck that bitch. Let's just go get some beers, Quasi. Let's go get some beers, man. Let's go, you know, enjoy. Pound some suds back. Let's have a good time. We don't need these bitches. Let's just have it. You know what I mean? Like, it was just like you felt so bad for me. It really resonated as a teenage boy watching that.
You know, this does remind me. I'm going to do a little plug here, if you don't mind, for one of our recent live streams on Dark Disney Tales. So this does kind of connect to that a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, totally does. Totally connects with the live stream podcast that we did not long ago at all. But so we had Lon Chaney Sr., and we have to say Sr. because there is a Lon Chaney Jr. that's on this list as well, which is very odd to see two Lon Chaneys doing the same type of thing, really.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
But so we'll go from number 9, we're going to go to number 8. Number 8 is none other than Jekyll and Hyde.
Oh, there we go.
Now, The Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, you were just saying about a certain comic book character that owes a lot to Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Well, no doubt it has to be Dr. Bruce Banner. Also, when he gets pissed off, turns into the Incredible Hulk.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you don't see it, now you do, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's the thing
it's
about the Bill Short box. even when we're talking about horror stuff and we're talking about movies and things, we're always trying to relate it back to comic books because there is always a source there. There's always either something came from comic books into movies or vice versa. Something came from movies and birthed into comic books. So they've always been kind of in tandem with each other. There's a good relationship that they've had throughout the years and for a long time. Comic books are from the 30s. Movies started to really take off in the 20s and 30s. And, you know, that's, we see this kind of relevance that continues to happen.
Absolutely.
So Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, the 1931 version, I believe when we were talking earlier, you were actually referencing one from 41 and I was referencing one from 31. So we're going to go with the 31 version starring Frederick March, who played Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde in this film.
Ah, there we go.
Again,
classic movie.
You know, makeup really takes off in this film and really brings the house down. There's some truly horrifying scenes, don't get me wrong, but in comparison, it's the makeup that really makes you see this brooding, hulking kind of a beast that is truly terrifying. It's no longer Dr. Jekyll, no longer, you know, the intelligent man that he once was. He's more of this bestial madman. That's out to basically straight up murder your ass. You know, he does not care. He doesn't give two shits.
And like you see the craftsmanship and the makeup. There's no question about it.
And it's like the person who they are as a human ultimately, and then their id, their very basic desires. So the id, the very basic desires of Dr. Jekyll becomes Mr. Hyde. So it's a very fascinating story based again off of a book. A Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. I actually, Kevin, I have one from the early 1900s, a copy of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde that's quite a prized possession of mine. I was very glad to get a copy of that.
Oh, how did you do that?
I found it just randomly out and about, so I got very lucky.
Yeah, you very much are a very lucky man to get one of the original copies, you say, huh?
Uh-huh.
Ah, very impressive. That's probably like at least a 100-year-old book right there.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's actually, if it's not 100 years old yet, it will be shortly. So yeah, it's a very old book that I have. But let's go ahead and move on. We are going to go, we just did number 8, Jekyll and Hyde. Let's go ahead with number 7. We're going to go with The Invisible Man. Now, The Invisible Man, we love the character. And we love the idea, but at some point it just becomes them kind of wire moving items and you're pretending someone's there. And that's great. And that's a really cool special effect. Don't get me wrong, but there's no true pageantry involved there. There's no makeup process. There's no real acting process there, you know, when there's like moving stuff like that. Now, once he gets into bandages and things, you know, and we see him as the Invisible Man all bandaged up and stuff, that's cool. He looks cool, and he's a cool character. They actually have tried to bring back the Invisible Man several times, including just recently. There was a Blumhouse film, The Invisible Man, that totally, completely different from what we saw back then as far as the Invisible Man. And even from the 80s version, I think it was 80s or 90s version with Chevy Chase, The Memoirs of an Invisible Man.
That's true. And you know, the original book was based on an H.G. Wells novel. Also, H.G. Wells did War of the Worlds as well, or wrote.
Yes. We all know what happened with that.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
People were, like, getting their kids and driving them out of there to get out of the U.S. or wherever the hell they were at. And
You talk about the Orson Welles radio broadcast.
War of the Worlds. Yeah. Going back to The Invisible Man, it was played by Claude Rains that acted in The Invisible Man and played The Invisible Man. Very good performance, very strong theatrical performance. And, of course, you know, all these guys, most of them, they came from a background of theater. Theater, Kevin, the theater.
That's right. So, of course, he had to put those theatrical, onstage theatrical chops to use.
Mm-hmm. Now, we go from The Invisible Man, and we go to number 6. Now, number 6, some people would argue that it would go or should go higher on the list. But we decided to keep them where he's at, particularly because when you think of him, you think of him as a great character, but he really hasn't spawned as much from his character as some of these others on the list. So we're going with, when we're going with number six, I believe, we're going with The Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Yes. Now, do you feel, getting back into comics again, actually I could have said this about Invisible Man, a relation to Susan Richards, or Sue Storm, Sue Richards, would you say that The Creature of the Black Lagoon can in some ways be connected to some of the other muck monsters in comics that would come in later?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, Man-Thing wasn't created until the 70s, I believe. And Swamp Thing followed not long after that. Before that, there was the original muck monster. And anybody that wants to try to correct me, please feel free. I could be wrong, but I believe the original first muck monster ever created was the Heap. And even then, that was from the 40s.
Mm-hmm.
So that was, a really, truly kind of a mucky kind of character. He was very fluffy. He was almost like a leaf character, which is funny, to say the least. But one fascinating thing that I found out living out here in L.A. was that there's a place in Simi Valley, California. It's called Corriganville Park. And they had it was formerly a filming site / ranch. And they had a cave there. They still do, where they filmed a lot of Westerns and stuff to make it look like a mine. But they also still have the bare basics of this underwater component where they used to film a TV serial about, I think it was, Jungle Jim or something like that, or Lagoon Boy, or one of those types of films that was done there. But they also had to do some pickup shots, some extra shots of the creature underwater for The Creature from the Black Lagoon at Corriganville Park. So if you do go there, if you're in California and you're near Simi Valley, you can drive there and check it out. It's really kind of cool to see the underwater area. It's not underwater anymore, of course. You can walk down into the basin, which is cement, but you can see how they would have filled it up, and you see the windows that they have where they would have put the cameras inside, and they would have loaded the people and the cameras down inside this little pod, like cement kind of a pod thing that they created to be able to film those underwater scenes and sequences. So it was really cool. And they would have caught, while filming The Creature from the Black Lagoon, Rico Browning, who was the creature when in water. And then when he was on land, it would have been Ben Chapman that played the creature on land. So this is one of those rare ones where two people played the same character in one film.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, both uncredited, by the way, and it wasn't until later that they were actually given some credit. So that's really
cool. That's about time. Well, that's good.
Yeah. So let's go on here. We were at number six for Creature from the Black Lagoon. We're going to go to number five. Kevin, can you have any guesses on who number five would be?
I feel it's going to be something that's very, very popular.
That's a really good guess.
Something that's well known. Something if you went to Universal Studios, you would, be recognizable.
Yes, absolutely. Something that they still have a ride for right now anyway. That is, from what I hear, going to change, which is sad to hear. But always my favorite ride at Universal Studios in Hollywood is The Mummy.
Oh, yeah. Yes, absolutely. The only thing that sucks about that ride is too short.
It is too short, but the saving grace for that ride nowadays is that it's not that popular, so you can get on it multiple times and re-enjoy yourself, which I always love. Every time I go to Universal, I'd be on that ride two or three times at least.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah,
it's just very fun. Brandon Fraser was made into an action star because of The Mummy, the late 90s film that they did with him and, what's her face? Oof, can never remember her name. You know who I'm talking about.
Oh, you're talking about, is it Rachel Weisz?
Yes, Rachel Weisz. Thank you very much. Yeah. Yeah, the lovely Rachel Weisz and Brandon Fraser team up to fight Imhotep and the evils that ensue upon their land. It's a very fun film, the first one. The second one's fun as well. Third one, not so much, which is basically what killed the franchise. And at some point, I'm sure they'll reboot it. because it was so huge.
Well, didn't they technically reboot it with Tom Cruise, or you just consider that a different universe?
No, you're right. They did try to. I just completely ignore that as having ever existed. So, okay. They tried, and they even created a Jekyll and Hyde type character. Spoilers, guys, in with Mr. Gladiator himself.
Russell Crowe.
Thank you. Russell Crowe. God, I'm so terrible with names. Yeah, with Russell Crowe. So they tried to do that. At the end, we realized that Russell Crowe was actually Jekyll and Hyde, and the whole mummy thing, it was just really bad. I'm not against a female playing certain characters, but a female playing the main mummy character just felt weird, but I was willing to go with it. But the only problem is that the script was weak, and the story wasn't there. The special effects were just eh. The scares weren't there. So they needed, I already went in going, you guys have to convince me this is a good movie. And it really wasn't at all. So it didn't hit the mark for anybody, really. And it just fell with a thud. And they thought Tom Cruise was going to make it a huge thing, and it wasn't. And it's unfortunate. So, you know, many mummies before have come. And in fact,
the original
number one mummy, the original, was played by none other than Boris Karloff.
That's right.
Who you told me had a little problem with the fact that he loved women. And what was that? What was the issue, Kevin?
Well, I don't know if it's about a love of women per se, but just I noticed that he's been married. He was married six times. Like, oh my goodness, six different times he was married.
Yeah, six times is a lot. A lot. I guess it's not so much of an issue for him as it would be for the five exes that came before the sixth.
Right.
But damn, that's a lot of times to get married. Dude must have been in love so much, or just like knocked everyone up. I don't know. But wow, six times is a lot. Also, did you know that he had a British father and an Indian mother? So he was, intercontinental or an incontinental type of vibe to him, a particular look that helped him
unique.
Get these roles.
Yes, yeah, a very unique role. I mean, a very unique look to get those roles.
Yeah, so he played the original mummy, and then the mummies later were played by, if I recall, it was Lon Chaney Jr.,
mm-hmm.
who played mummies in three other mummy films.
Yeah,
and Lon Chaney Jr., of course, being the son of the Lon Chaney, who was the Hunchback and the Phantom. So the Chaney realm, and Kevin, I don't know if you know this, but on my father's side, I believe it's on my father's side, or is it my mother? No, it's my mother's side. On my mother's side, our last name was originally, there was Chaney's in our lineage. So I could possibly be related to Lon Chaney Jr. or Lon Chaney.
Yeah, you could possibly be a distant cousin.
Absolutely. So that's kind of crazy. So we're going to, speaking of Lon Chaney Jr., we're going to move on then to number four, which is, of course, the Wolfman. Wolfman's very famous for a lot of reasons, but one of them being the spawn of werewolves in particular, you know, in the popularity that came with that. I think werewolves are some of the most popular type of supernatural creatures that we could have movies on, and I think Twilight could argue that as well.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's something interesting about the wolf, or just the transformation, because, you know, we've seen movies after movie over the years and decades where it's still very fascinating. You know, the moon, full moon comes, and all of a sudden, you know, the effect comes. You get all hairy, the claws come out, you start howling in the middle of the night. There's just interesting about that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's scary, too, if it's happening right in front of you, of course. And then, of course, you know, if you're being chased mm-hmm. by a werewolf, well, you know, all bets are off unless you have, like, whether it was a silver bullet.
Right. Yeah, and the new Hulk title. What's the name of that Hulk title, Kevin?
It's something like Immortal Hulk.
Yeah, the new Immortal Hulk title. It actually is taking a page from the Wolfman now, where at nighttime is when the Hulk takes over. So they've actually done a little Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde thing, but also kind of put a little bit of the Wolfman in there, and that understanding of that character as well, which I found fascinating. Hmm. Yeah, so it's kind of cool. Lon Chaney Jr. played the Wolfman, and of course he played three Mummy films. He played the Mummy. They kind of, a lot of them just jump around, to be honest, back and forth and back and forth, which is kind of fun, I think, for them too. Plus it also gives them work. Plus it's easy for the producers and stuff to say, oh, just use Chaney over there. You know, you don't have a Mummy. Yeah, Karloff's out. Okay, put Chaney in there. That's fine. He's got makeup on. No one will know. No one cares. They just want the monster. You know, I can already hear it in the boardroom.
Of course. You know they do it.
Let's go to number three, Kevin. Number three. This one might surprise people, but number three, I think, is just because she's such a strong character in such a fantastic film, Bride of Frankenstein.
Oh, yes. You can't go wrong there. It's a classic. I mean, many people know the character, or at least have heard the character, at least seen some famous clips from the that particular movie. So, she, you know, if anything, I would think she's probably one of the first partners to one of the monsters that you're actually sympathetic towards.
Yeah. Absolutely. And it's one of those things where it's she's a very strong female character, too. She doesn't want Frankenstein's, you know, the monster, Frankenstein's monster. She doesn't want him. She's like, I'm my own creature. She basically ultimately rejects him. Doesn't want to be around him. But honestly, The Bride of Frankenstein is the best Frankenstein movie that we got out of all.
Yes. Yes. It's very highly revered, highly praised over the last, you know, 80 something years.
Yeah. Yeah. So then we go from Bride of Frankenstein, and we go right into none other than Boris Karloff playing the original Frankenstein, or a.k.a. Frankenstein's monster, which he broke the mold when he played that character. Every time you hear about Frankenstein and Universal, you think Boris Karloff. You don't think of anybody else, even though later he was played by other people, that character. But originally,
He set the tone.
Absolutely. Set the tone and broke the mold. I mean, Frankenstein would not be Frankenstein without Boris Karloff. And Frankenstein in general, if you ask people their favorite Halloween character or their favorite monster or their favorite Universal monster, at least 10 people, you poll them, one of them is going to say Frankenstein. It's just something that's going to happen. Frankenstein is seen as a neutral character, not a horrific character. It's a tragic character. One of those characters that doesn't necessarily mean to do harm, but is just scared and running from things. And that's the fascinating thing about it. He was created by a man that didn't understand the science behind it, of really what he was doing. And he created a tormented soul, is what he did. And we've had so many incantations of Frankenstein. Creature Commandos, by the way, in DC Comics, has Big Frank as Frankenstein. Marvel Comics had Frankenstein and Son of Frankenstein, you know, premiere. Even DC had Son of Frankenstein that first premiered. I believe it was in a comic book with what is his name? Here we go again with the names. The Phantom Stranger.
Oh, yes. This is back in the 70s, right?
Yeah, back in the 70s. So there's a lot of Frankenstein mythology that's carried on throughout the comic book world. Even Bernie Wrightson, his most famous art is of Frankenstein and the way he interpreted the character. So just a phenomenal character, phenomenal actor playing him. He was phenomenal in Frankenstein, Bride of Frankenstein. Elsa was phenomenal in Bride. That's why Bride worked so well. But we can't have all these characters if we did not have the number one on the list. The numero uno. The one character played by Bela Lugosi.
That's right.
Who defined the role for Dracula.
That's right. In Dracula.
Right. And we have so many Dracula spinoffs, Dracula parodies. Leslie Nielsen playing Dracula Dead and Loving It.
Christopher Lee
playing Dracula for the Hammer films. The Lost Boys in the 80s having to deal with vampires in general.
Gary Oldman.
Blade 3, where they fought Dracula himself, basically. Gary Oldman, in Bram Stoker's Dracula. just a phenomenal character that continues to be popular and sometimes even sparkle. But
yes, true. Well, one thing that's interesting and special about this movie, this is where they first romanticize the character, or at least the vampire Dracula, so to speak. Because as you know or may not know, the original Dracula, so to speak, was a historic character named Vlad the Impaler, or Vlad Dracul, from Middle Age Romania, who was known for impaling people or impaling his enemies. Then, of course, you know, the first probably real popular vampire film was Nosferatu that came out in Germany back in the 20s. So that, you know, that of course had a horrific looking, you know, vampire there, so you weren't attracted to
right
to that creature.
Yeah, this was the first kind of charming one that we saw that was like
charming,
this is what,
dressed well, dressed
and could hypnotize you with his eyes, his beautiful eyes. Shadow of the Vampire was a film with Willem Dafoe where he, I believe it was called Shadow of the Vampire, where he played Nosferatu. And the funny thing is in that movie, they literally hired a vampire. And they didn't know it, and they hired a vampire, which is what Willem plays. And he acts out the film. Because they always said that they thought that the main actor playing in it was creepy as hell and seemed very vampiretic in nature. But it could have been he was just method acting. We don't know. But it's funny that they created this movie. And this movie, if you haven't seen it, is creepy. Like Shadow the Vampire, it's really creepy. And Willem does an amazing job. So I highly recommend that one if you haven't seen that, it being Halloween time right now and scary movie time. It's definitely worth watching, particularly if you don't want to watch some of those old black and whites, but you want to watch parts of it and enjoy the fun nature of this movie. It's terrifying and fun at the same time. So I highly recommend it.
Hey, one last thing about the original Dracula movie. Guess what the premiere date was?
What was it?
Valentine's Day, 1931.
Bring your loved one. And we'll suck them dry. I don't know. Like,
yeah. Well, what's funny is in a few months, it's going to be the 90th anniversary of that movie. So, you know, it's funny. I wouldn't be surprised they try to do, well, like, actually, it's hard to say during everything going on right now in the world. But if it's possible, maybe they'll try to do a re-release for the 90th anniversary.
Yeah,
on Valentine's
or maybe
Day.
Drive-ins will bring it back.
That would make sense.
That's the one thing that's been cool about all this is the re-offering of the drive-in, the revival of the drive-in theater, bringing it back. It's really super cool to see because me being where I was raised in Ohio, the drive-in theater was amazing, an amazing time. We had one 5 minutes from my house when I was a kid. And now that I'm an adult in Ohio, when I go back, there's still one that's 15 minutes from where I live. So it's no matter what, I can still go to the drive-in theater. And it's always been a fun time. Always enjoy myself going to the drive-in.
That's true.
But speaking about that, I think that's gonna end us on our list here. It's been short and sweet. And we appreciate you guys tuning in and listening. And we thank you for that. And please, please, please find us on some of our podcasting apps and sites. Kevin, can you give us a list?
Well, let's see here. We're on Spotify, Spreaker, Stitcher, Blueberry, iTunes, SoundCloud,
iHeartRadio. Yeah, we're also on Instagram and Facebook. You can find us there. We do our live podcasts. We try to get them out once a week, but it's not always a guarantee. Sometimes we just, you know, we have lives, we have to work sometimes and stuff in the evening. So, but we try to get out one live podcast a week if we can. And you can find that on our YouTube page. It's under Rumble Spoon Productions, which is the production company that produces this podcast. You can find all kinds of fun things on rumblespoon.com, actually. They do some web series and stuff. They were doing an action superhero comedy web series called The Blue Beetle Ted Kord Returns. And a host of other short vignettes and horror films that they've done over the years. The Birth, Succubus, all kinds of fun stuff like that. So if you do feel inclined, check out that website. Also, you, again, can find us on Twitter as well as Facebook and Instagram. And if we maybe are allowed out sometime, we will see you out in the real world.
At the suite. Lovely, precious comic book shop.
This has been The Real Short Box. We'll see you at the comic shop. Thanks for listening.